This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
It's Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We are Worldwide Wave. We take you around the globe, one queer story at a time. And I am Matt, and the glitter is being cleaned up from the Pride March on the weekend out the front of our future home at the Victorian Pride Centre in St Kilda. But tonight we're still in the old studios here, and I am thrilled to be joined on the Worldwide Wave panel by Stefan.
Good evening.
And Alex.
Hello. Now, when was the last time a webinar caused an international incident? Are we talking about someone's partner walking naked in the background? No. Someone who couldn't come off mute or couldn't remove a dog filter? No. We're talking about a chat with an American author about their new book on the cost of LGBT equality. Their chat in Singapore landed the US Embassy a reprimand from the government, warning them not to interfere with local matters.
In a place where homosexuality is illegal, there yet there are legal gay bars, it is clear that Singapore is a land of complexity. One thing that is obvious, though, is that the Singapore government doesn't like the international community getting involved in what they see as their business. So tonight, we delve into what is behind this culture and why LGBTI rights aren't progressing with our friend from the show, Yang Fa Liao, the executive director of Ugachaga LGBT Counselling Service in Singapore.
Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
We have a secular state. We do recognize that it's diversity of religions, races and cultures as well. So there's a clear separation of church and state, and yet religion and state. And we do know that there's a minority of Christians in Singapore, for example, who vocally and very fiercely champion their what they call pro-family and anti-LGBT cause.
Singapore's Ministry of Foreign Affairs this week formally reminded the United States Embassy that foreign missions, quote, are not to interfere in our domestic, social and political matters. They added that is included such issues as how sexual orientation should be dealt with in public policy. So how did the USA supposedly interfere? They provided non-financial support to a webinar with US author Lee Badgett, who spoke about the findings of her recent book, The Economic Case for LGBT Equality. The invitation-only event was run by not-for-profit Ugachaga LGBT Counselling Service, who were immensely surprised by the rebuke. On a previous visit to Melbourne, the head of Ugachaga, Yang Fa Liao, gave us an insight into what is preventing the advancement of decriminalisation of homosexuality and other basic rights in Singapore.
You mentioned opposition groups, conservatives, religious groups. Mm. Do they verbally, visually oppose the LGBT community, or are they getting more say than you, or is it LGBT issues just aren't on the radar for anyone?
It's kind of just to set a context for how things, we know how things are working out in Singapore as well with the opposing voices, shall we say. They come from a particular minority religion in Singapore, and we also know for a fact that they are a minority within this minority religion. And this is back to how in Singapore, at least, we have a secular state. We do recognize that it's diversity of religions, races and cultures as well. So there's a clear separation of church and state, and yet religion and state. And we do know that there's a minority of Christians in Singapore, for example, who vocally and very fiercely champion their NT, what they call pro-family and anti-LGBT cause. And it pains me to say this because in the work that I do as a social worker and counsellor for Ugachagao, we do meet with many individuals and couples and families who identify as religious, whether it's Christians or Muslims or Hindu or Buddhists. And it pains me and it hurts them to be put in a situation where they feel like they have to choose between being either pro-family or pro-LGBTQ. And that's not fair because for many people in a multi-religious country like ours, faith and religion are such important things. And yet we know there's this minority of Christians in Singapore who put up such a strong, very vocal, actually, opposition. So, for example, in recent months, we've seen a particular church, they've been advertising conversion trauma on social media, in particular Facebook. I've actually taken it up with Facebook for them to do something about this. Here we have an openly homophobic church purchasing ads on Facebook. And the message that this particular church is sending out is appealing directly to the local LGBT plus community to come home, and for them co-opting the language of the queer community to come out and to come home.
So you're lost, we'll find you, we'll...
Yes.
If somebody is within a religious family, mm-hmm, and they chose to come out, what might the repercussions be for them?
To be fair, the experiences will vary. So we do know lots of positive experiences as well. So if we were to talk about the more negative experiences, we do know of families, again, in particular, some Christian and some Muslim families, where a lot of the views are very much, I would describe them as quite very conservative fundamentalists as well, in that there's a very clear black and white. So according to scripture, to them at least, it will be a case of, no, you do not cross that line. You cannot be gay. You cannot be lesbian. You cannot be trans. If you are, either we throw you out or we convert you or we disown you. So it's really clear, black and white. And when I meet families like that, it also hurts me. And I think of how all those many other religious families who find it within themselves, that strength and that courage and that love to accept their queer children.
How does Ugachaga, a gay counselling service, exist in a country where it's illegal to be gay?
That's the $250,000 question. And I say $250,000 because that's how much it costs to run Ugachaga.
Yep.
For the whole year. So a combination of grants, anonymous donors, individual donors, people who support us in our fundraising activities.
And no government funding.
No government funding, because obviously that would be difficult. And we have been fortunate in the past 20 years, maybe in the past 10, 12 years or so, we have been able to raise more funds. And so it's in the last 10 years, we've been able to maintain an office premises. And also to have a very small team of full-time staff, myself included. So every year has been lots of hard work by staff before me, as well as the current staff I have with me right now, as well as our team of wonderful volunteers over the past 20 years.
There was an open letter written to the Prime Minister seeking change, mm-hmm, in Singapore. Ugachaga was one of the signatories. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit more about the letter and what you're wanting to achieve, but also, is there any risk to you in putting your name as a counselling service to, mm-hmm, something which is a overtly or potentially political message?
So a bit of background, a bit of context to how this letter came about. So on 21st of July this year, there was a 10th Pink Dot. So the tagline for Pink Dot this year was, "We are ready." So basically, we are ready for decriminalisation, we're ready for equality and everything that's in terms of positive developments for the LGBT plus community. So at the event on 21st of July, there was an announcement of 10 declarations for equality. So what we did, the 12 signatories, 12 organisations, decided to write an open letter to the Prime Minister with those 10 declarations for equality, and alongside each declaration to put forward a commitment, a recommendation. And also an invitation, really, for the Prime Minister and his government to have that conversation and dialogue with us. So To answer your question about repercussions for us, well, if anything, what our government has always said to us about conversations about LGBT rights and equality is, well, it needs to be a conversation that we have as Singaporeans.
Yang Fa Liao from the Ooga Chugga Counselling Service, LGBT Counselling Service in Singapore, with us on Joy 94.9. Amazing how, you know, a big international kerfuffle can come over just, like, it wasn't even the sponsorship that the US Embassy gave them for this webinar. It was like support. There was no money or anything. The event was an invitation-only thing. They sent it out. Apparently, they had let's call them safe statements in the thing about, you know, respecting the local cultures and working with local community groups. And this is what the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Singapore said. They reminded the US Embassy that foreign missions here are not to interfere in our domestic, social and political matters, including issues such as how sexual orientation should be dealt with in public policy. These are choices for only Singaporeans to debate and decide.
It's very, very Chinese tone, like it's that type of thing we hear a lot of, you know, the rebukes about, you know, don't impede on our sovereignty. You know, the states like China, sorry, I don't want to sound like I'm China bashing. This is just, it's sort of strange, like your hypersensitivity over,
and ironically, they've probably actually raised the profile of the whole issue and the, you know, certainly outsiders would be looking at this and going, what is going on here? Mm. And coming up, I want to delve into it because I think there's a bigger picture going on here. But
yeah.
US Embassy, first of all, Ooga Chugga, we reached out to them just to check that, you know, how were they going with this? And they were just so surprised. They did not see this coming at all. The US Embassy has also come out. I'll just try and find their statement in a minute. Saying, you know, we weren't trying to do anything. They said they have a platform of encouraging basic human rights.
And the book itself doesn't actually look at Singapore or it's really kind of global that book on the show.
We have. In fact, if you go onto our website, you can listen to the podcast. It'll be the same sorts of things. It's about the value to the a national economy of embracing equality.
Mm.
And it actually shows how they measured value and contribution to the economy when people can be themselves. So it really, really is a strange one for them to pick.
Indeed.
We'll give you a hint because it coincides with the recent Universal Periodic Review by the United Nations on Singapore, where a whole lot of countries spoke out against their LGBT laws. So perhaps there's something else at play.
Yes, it sounds like it.
But we will get into that more with our guests. We hear some of the other ways that the Singapore government has tried to silence the voice of the LGBT community in Singapore. You are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Turn us on and we'll turn it out. Joy.
Hi, I am Tim.
And I'm Ben.
From Hallam, Melbourne.
And you are listening to the World Wide Wave
on Joy 94.9.
Messages coming in. Tim from Abbotsford. Singapore has a homophobic government and it controls the local media and public dialogue. PM Lee has an openly gay nephew, but PM Lee does not care about discrimination against the LGBTI plus community. The US Embassy will ignore Singapore government's rap on the knuckles. Thanks for that, Tim. We have actually covered gay nephew. He's quite out there. He's not hiding anything at all. And another message here. Singapore... hi, guys. Great chat about Singapore. The real issue here that we have found out the hard way after wasting tens of thousands of dollars on lawyers is the Constitution, which does not force the government to repeal Section 377A, which is the old sodomy laws.
Yeah.
So it is constitutional to discriminate against gays, migrant workers, maids, etc. That's from Paul, who is living with my husband in Singapore for the past 19 years. Great to have you listening in, Paul. Great to have your insights on the ground as we talk all things Singapore tonight on World Wide Wave.
Use of policy to quietly interrupt, send a message to or send a message to the LGBTI community appears to be an ongoing tool used by Singapore government. In a country that is home to many multinational corporation businesses and businesses which are actively courted by the government, Singapore also hasn't been shy about letting these outside corporation know they need to play by Singapore's rules. Singapore's annual Pink Dot event, aiming to raise the profile of the LGBTI community and advocate for improved rights, successfully built its profile with the sponsorship support of many multinational companies that provided inclusive policy for their staff. Seeing this as a threat, the government stopped these sponsorships. Yang Fa Liao from Ugachaga LGBT Counseling Service in Singapore explains.
Now, that whole thing of Singaporeans having a discussion and the outsiders, the international community, because one of the things, one of the rules that's in place is for Pink Dot, the park that it's held in, the Democracy Park, foreigners can't be in there. It's just for Singaporeans.
So there's actually an Act of Parliament that governs the use of the conduct of activities and events on Hong Lim Park. And 2 years ago, the rules were tightened to strictly prohibit majority of foreign-owned companies from sponsoring events that take place on Hong Lim Park. So that's very specific. So it also...
Was that targeting the LGBT community?
So it meant that overnight, Pink Dot was not able to be supported by foreign-owned companies like Facebook, Twitter, Google, Microsoft, and various other sort of international banks as well. In the past 2 years, Pink Dot has done a fantastic job, and Pink Dot entirely volunteer-run as well. They've done a fantastic job of mobilizing local businesses to come forward and put the money into supporting a local event, and a local event sponsored by local companies and attended by local people. So I suppose you could look at it both ways. On the one hand, yes, it's a big loss in that they were not able to continue with funding from overseas sponsors. On the other hand, it also meant that local sponsors had to step up and ensure that the event was able to run and successfully.
And perhaps that is something that will resonate more with the government. I mean, if they have done this as some sort of, you know, an obstructive behaviour to try and slow down or shut down Pink Dot, but then locals have stepped up and they're saying, well, we'll have a conversation with locals. Maybe that is a positive thing.
Perhaps. Who knows? Who knows what the government might be thinking? It might have been a strategic, tactical move on their part as well.
And what about Yang Fa himself? How did you get involved in Ugachaga?
So I've been working full-time with Ugachaga for the past 5 years. I joined the team in 2013. Prior to that, I've been good friends with many of the staff and volunteers at Ugachaga over the years. Ugachaga was first started in 1999. And I remember in the early years, it was running support groups for men and for women, and also for transgender people as well, and also providing counseling services in various locations. And I remember joining Ugachaga's support group in the early 2000s. And I found that as a gay man in my late 20s back then, it was incredible to have that kind of peer support. And that's basically what Ugachaga started off with being a safe space for queer people to have the support from peers, and eventually over time from trained professionals as well. So for me back then, that was really important, and I thought that was a really powerful experience for me. Over the years, I've stayed in touch with the volunteers and the staff who continue to run Ugachaga. And when the opportunity came up to take up a full-time role with Ugachaga, it took a bit of deliberating, and then I thought, yes, why not? Because prior to this, I was working in a different role. I've always worked in the non-profit sector all my life, and I thought it was time to move to a different organization, and I did, and it's been 5 years.
Do you ever see a time when Singapore won't need Ugachaga?
As a social worker, that is something that I always believe in, that the work we do, however optimistic or maybe it sounds, that the work we do should not need to be done. So yes, I think that a term we sometimes use is work ourselves out of business. The day hopefully may come where we don't need to have a special LGBT counselling support service. The day will come when, you know, all my fellow social workers and counsellors and professionals in the healthcare and social care sector will be able to and comfortable with working with any client, regardless of who or what they are. Whoever walks through that door and wants to access a service, they should be able to receive it.
We hope to see that day. Thank you so much for coming in and speaking to us, Yang Fa Liao from Ooga Chugga Counselling Service in Singapore. Thanks for being a part of World Wide Wave.
Thank you.
They're doing some great work there in some these constant little niggly challenges, and that's the way I'd categorise the webinar type incident that's come up. But Pink Dot, that's another really good example where the government thought they were going to, you know, silence this mob critique of queer people chanting for rights and, you know, having a bit of fun in Hong Lim Park. What actually happened was local businesses then picked up and contributed to continue Pink Dot, and it continues to this day, and they get 35, 40, 50,000 people in the park. And every year I look forward to they put up the pink lights in the air, and it's formed some sort of message, about repealing Section 377A or all those sorts of things. So they've got some really very good ways of getting their message out. But just this whole thing of the constant hurdles that keep getting put in front of them, each barrier is a little bit higher, a little bit higher.
Well, it's hard. But it doesn't seem to you know. I mean, people are still able to. They're not completely silenced, so they're still able to express their discontent and to live as an LGBT person. So
yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's just there is as these. As our messages confirm, you know, there's layers of sort of conservative values that run through echelons of Singaporean administration, government, police. I think it's still got a while to go. But yeah, maybe it's generational change that's required, more younger politicians.
And there is definitely a generational change. There's some surveys being done which shows the next generation is a bit more open and everything. The other thing that happened in the week to do with Pink Dot, actually, so Pink Dot, the United Nations has these periodic reviews of every country that's in their membership. They come up every 5 years, and basically a collective of other countries in the world give some recommendations to the government. It happens for Australia as well. And of course, we'll go into this a bit more, but a whole lot of countries said, hey, Section 377 should change. One of the government's retorts to that was, well, you know, we don't really have, we do not tolerate violence, abuse and discrimination, harassment against any person. So they didn't actually call out the LGBT people. And the way they showed proof of this is because we have Pink Dot. And Pink Dot has come out during the week and said, don't you dare use us as a something to say that
particularly
the country
when
is on the right.
Particularly when you've stood in our way path. In the past.
Exactly. So we'll talk a bit more about what the UN periodic review said and what Australia said about Singapore's laws as well. We've got lots more on World Wide Wave.
Joy.org.au, where our diverse communities can come together across the nation, across the globe. Joy.
And it's the show that takes you around the globe one queer story at a time, World Wide Wave. Now, a special hello to everybody that might be listening to us on podcast. You can subscribe to receive our podcast automatically either at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or on iTunes or your favourite podcast platform. And don't forget to leave us a review.
We've got more messages coming in. Tim, again, Singapore government is hypocritical in so many ways. We should not be surprised at anything it does against the LGBTI community. Australians should not travel there, Tim from Abbotsford says.
Yeah, we talk about that, but is it the best thing to do? We always have this discussion, don't we?
And how it impacts the local community. Another message there, tragically, Pink Dot is not changing anything apart from personal stories. Time to do something different. Do they need to mix it up? Well, this message we know is getting through because we've actually had a message through from Yung Fa in Singapore who's listening in. And just he's let us know that the Universal Periodic Review, which we'll talk about in a bit more, it's the first time that Australia has said anything about Singapore's LGBTI issues in three cycles. Three times this has come up for Singapore. So we'll find out in a moment what Singapore, what Australia has actually said.
More of your favourite shows. Joy 94.9.
Now, Ooga Chugga is one of the oldest LGBT organisations in Singapore. One with the best name, I reckon. It is a community-based, non-profit organisation providing counselling services to the LGBT community and inclusion training to corporate businesses. As we know only too well here at Joy, maintaining that sense of community is vital, whether your community is under attack, such as what we experienced in the marriage equality debate, or if you're going through a global pandemic. Yung Fa Liao, the executive director of Ooga Chugga, gave us an idea of how they have been continuing their services throughout the challenges of COVID-19.
So a big part of our service provision, service delivery, is counselling services. So primarily, we have a lot of contact with clients in our professional face-to-face counselling services. So that's a good old-fashioned people coming to our office on an appointment basis. We provide face-to-face professional support. Additionally, we also provide anonymous and confidential hotline, telephone hotline, WhatsApp and email counselling services. So that is a pretty significant bulk of our service provision to the community. Additionally, we also work with the community on community engagement programs. We also engage with our allies and partners in the corporate community as well, corporate engagement. And of course, we also run professional workshops. So with what's been happening with the COVID pandemic here in Singapore and all over the world as well, we've had to all do things differently. So for example, just over the weekend, we have made the decision as a result of our latest government measures announced to suspend our face-to-face counselling service. So that's been a decision that had to be made, but of course still difficult, not just for us as counsellors as well, as an organisation, a counselling organisation, but certainly a decision that's going to be difficult for our face-to-face counselling clients as well, because well, for many of us who either deliver counselling services or receive counselling services, I mean, that face-to-face contact is so crucial, that the rapport that we build with our clients, and I'm speaking here as a counsellor myself, so we're thinking of ways to do that differently or even to cancel the face-to-face appointments. That's not easy. Thankfully, we are still able to continue our WhatsApp and email counselling services. So again, we are so thankful, absolutely thankful for our volunteers who have basically stepped up to say yes, they're prepared to do this from home, because that really helps in service provision continuity as well. Unfortunately, we're not able to continue our telephone hotline service because in the office we have the good old-fashioned telephone landline which we're not able to kind of divert to our volunteers. So that's been a pretty significant impact on how we do things as an organization. We do want to be able to continue providing support through our email and WhatsApp counselling services. And just not thinking of some of the clients who have come back to us and sharing about what's been going on with them. So, I mean, people who connect with us for emotional support often have issues going on in their lives. Often that involves a certain amount of anxiety, depression, you know, relationship issues, mental health, sexual health, or identity and sexuality concerns. And when an international crisis like COVID happens, it kind of adds on to those very uncertain, difficult feelings. And of course, with changes in how we are providing our service as well, with the suspension of our face-to-face service, that kind of exacerbates certain pre-existing concerns. So we do want to try our best to see how we can continue our clients through online means. So we want to try to do what we can alternatively. Perhaps at some point we might consider, you know, opening up more virtual online spaces, and that's where we as a team of staff and volunteers have to figure out how to use technology and creating more safe, queer-friendly online spaces to continue engaging with our community.
from Uga Chaga Counselling Service in Singapore. That's Young Fa Liao. I love the fact that they're doing counselling via WhatsApp. That's a great little, you know, adaptation.
That is good. That's great. Good. It's very accessible. And it's encrypted, so people will feel that security.
We were talking about the UN Periodic Review. So the Universal Periodic Reviews, so every country gets done every 5 years, and basically the government gets to put in its say, and then other groups within the community of the country can also put in their say. And our friends from Kaleidoscope Australia, Paula Gerber, they help local community groups in their countries around the Pacific region to make submissions, because when they used to do this, LGBT issues didn't get a voice. But giving them a bit of a hand on how to set it up, how to make your point known in these reviews, has been very successful. So then, once you've got the submissions, if you like, from all sides, all these other countries get to sit around and have a look at what you're doing and make recommendations. They can praise you for something. They can say, look, you really should make some changes. Let me give you some of the countries that have said Section 377 has to go. Spain, Sweden, United Kingdom, United States, Uruguay, Luxembourg, Malta, Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, and the first time New Zealand has commented on LGBT rights as well, Young Fars, let us know. Denmark, France, Iceland, Israel, Italy. The list goes on. And Australia as well. Australia has called for the repeal of Section 377A and to remove restrictions on LGBT-related content and enact anti-discrimination legislation.
So what's the, I mean, does it bring outcomes, this periodical review? Because I know that when they've used that for Australia, for refugees and asylum seekers, it hasn't make a difference.
It depends. Depends on the country, depends on the mood, depends on the level of defiance. I have a feeling, it's a personal view, but the fact that Singapore had such angst to put out something to an embassy based on, you know, support of a webinar, says that this is a touchy subject. Mm, it says that it's getting to them, and that's not a bad thing, I think.
Yeah.
I think that means that, you know, it is a top-of-mind issue, I think that's a bit of a rallying call for the local LGBT community to keep up the fight and keep pushing and insisting that there be change, really.
I mean, that's all we can do. I mean, it's hard to see what happens. And I know that, I mean, anecdotally, I know I've got a friend there who's having trouble with COVID and getting HIV medication because not wanting to disclose that fact there. So it's not easy for some people.
Definitely not.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave. Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
And a big thank you to our interviewee this week, which was Young Fa Liao, the Executive Director of Uga Chaga Counselling Service in Singapore. That's www.ukachaga.com.
And thank you for the messages on Facebook, Rex, Lise, Dwayne, Lana, and a whole lot more who have joined or interacted with us on Facebook this past week, and that's W3 Joy on Facebook.
Plus all those SMSs tonight, Tim, Paul, Young Far as well. We have a wonderful behind-the-scenes team, Peter, our podcaster, and Dean, our social media master.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Worldwide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.